This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 8:46 in the morning, and you're with Lee Chui Lin, Lin Mak, and Shyamalan Ganesan.
Shyamalan, thank you.
The honorary Lin in the room.
Yeah, you know, I'm so honored that you decided that you wanted.
I'm honored that you've accepted me into this little trio. It'll never break.
It's like our own special little club in the middle of BFM. Mm-hmm.
A club of confusion. That's all we're doing, really. Anyways, so we're on air all together because we are wanting to talk to you, really, about the updates, about the news, about the analysis that's going to be coming your way. So we just heard from Terrence. Let me just get this right. We just heard from Terrence Fernandez, who is, of course, a columnist at The Star. And up next, we're going to be hearing from Thomas Phan, chairperson of Bursay 2.0. Before that, though, we do have a tweet that's related to what we're going to talk about next from Joe, who says, as the founder of the Pulang Mengundi movement and representing Undi Rabu and all the volunteers who work to ensure our democracy is kept alive, it is disappointing that our voices gathered through the democratic process are silenced. For many who have tried to rebuild since May 9th, it's heartbreaking to know the impossible efforts to clean up will be undone after just a week of political games. Return the voice of the people. And on that note, we're going to be talking about just that with Thomas. Thomas, thank you so much for taking the call.
Hey, good morning to all.
So what, I guess, were your initial reactions and thoughts to these developments from you and also from Bursay?
Well, I think the whole drama actually has been going on unfolding, but I think from last Sunday, in fact, just a week ago, the Sheraton move, I think like most Malaysians, we felt disgusted that there was even this attempt. To us, it's nothing short of an attempted coup that is apparently succeeding, to basically throw out the mandate that was given to the new government to run the country for 5 years based on the reform promise. So I think this is a betrayal of the trust of the people and is undemocratic.
From Bursay's perspective, what are the priorities to ensure that democratic processes are followed in the formation of this next government?
Well, I think I have to reiterate that we are not saying this is unconstitutional or illegal in any way, but I think it's definitely more than unethical. It is totally wrong. But I think when you have a situation where a government collapsed midterm, the right thing to do is to go back to the people for a fresh mandate. So even if Tan Sri Muhyiddin gets sworn in today as the 8th Prime Minister of Malaysia, I think the honourable thing would be that he goes back to the people to get a fresh mandate for his government. You know, I think that is the legitimacy that is required. But we don't know. And it's quite unlikely that he will go back to the people for a fresh mandate. But that would be what we will be calling for should there be such a backdoor government.
Now, Thomas, Bursay has been working towards a number of institutional reforms that, crucially, we have not really seen materialise throughout the extent of the Pakatan Harapan administration so far. So do you expect this new coalition of Bersatu, UMNO and PAS to then take heed of those reforms that Bursay has been asking for?
Well, I think just to correct you a little bit there, there have been progress made on the electoral reform front. I think probably better than other fronts, but we're seeing a better election commission, the way by elections have been conducted, more transparent and more efficient, you know, resulting in higher voter turnout. And also different area, Undi 18 is a huge achievement, but not fast enough, true. Under the incoming new government that comprises of UMNO, largely the old government, and this time with PASS and GPS and others, we are not hopeful because this was largely the same people that we have been pushing for reform for the last more than one decade, and they totally ignore us and in fact make matter worse as far as institutional reforms were concerned. So we are not hopeful, but we will still continue to push for reform and, you know, hold this government accountable.
And we're seeing, I suppose, a tremendous amount of, you know, feelings of disempowerment. People feel, like you pointed out earlier, that, you know, there is this sense of a vote not meaning what it should mean. And we're seeing that in the form of rallies and gatherings like at Dataran Merdeka last night. From your point of view, what can or cannot be done in terms of these gatherings? Are you concerned that there will be crackdowns?
Well, you know, crackdowns, there is a reversion to the old way of doing things, you know, where the space given to protest and expression is a lot more confined. I think we are prepared for that. But I think space must be given for people to air their displeasure, discontent, and even anger in a peaceful way. I mean, this is our right under the Constitution, and I think this is needed in a democracy, because if you do not allow people that space to voice, they will find other way to express it, which can be even more detrimental to the country. Yes. So I call on whoever is in government, you know, allow the space for the rakyat to express their anger rightfully, you know, at this point in time. And the sense of disempowerment is really real. But I just want to say, don't give up hope on Malaysia, because if we manage to use our vote and change a government after 60 years, 2 years ago, we can still hold this government accountable and expect them to deliver.
So on that note, is Berse planning a rally in the coming days or weeks?
Well, you know, that is on the card. But, you know, as you know, things are really unfolding by the hours almost, you know, this whole week. A lot of time it's unfolding so fast that by the time we finish a statement, and for us it's pretty quick, things have changed and that statement has to be thrown out, you know. So I think we are waiting for the dust to really settle and then make that decision, because for us it's a heavy responsibility when we want to organize a mega rally. It's a strategy, it's a safety of people that is paramount in our country. So we'll make that announcement when the time comes.
So, Thomas, when it comes to talking about these gatherings from either side, is there a way that we can curb the spread of misinformation on social media? Because, I mean, there isn't really, it's already been a confusing few days. We don't really need more false information flying around.
Well, you know, I think that is the big question all around the world. You know, how do we cope with fake news and misinformation? I think the only way is that we ourselves need to have a very cautious approach, a cynical approach almost. When we receive a message, we have to assume that it's fake. And then if we care enough, we try to verify it or wait before we forward it. Otherwise, we'll be party to all this misinformation, you know. And I think, to me, you know, 9 out of 10 messages in the last week have been false or misleading. Yeah.
Thomas, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Most welcome. Thank you.
You just heard there from Thomas Van, chairperson of Berse 2.0, with a lot of good points, but I think one really great one to keep in mind on the subject of misinformation: if you're receiving messages on WhatsApp, assume they're fake and work from there. I think a lot of people do the exact opposite, yeah. And assume that it's like everything is real. They are, in fact, killing puppies on the streets, you know, and then kind of like react accordingly?
I think there is also a very prevalent attitude that, you know, I'm not sure whether this is real, but I'll share it anyway on
just
the small
case,
chance
yes.
that it is real. So I think that's...
I think it should be the opposite. Don't share just in case it's not real.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Assume it's fake. So that is one key takeaway from that. Now, after the 9 o'clock news, there will be news at 9. We are going to be speaking with Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute, for her take on the latest as we head closer and closer to that 10:30 swearing-in time that was talked about yesterday. In the meantime, keep it here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.